Cab Rodeo in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Alan Young. In May, at least five people contracted a fungal disease after attending the Lightning in a Bottle Music Festival at Buena Vista Lake in Kern County. The California Department of Public Health says three of the attendees were hospitalized and named the culprit as Valley Fever. In the first half of this year, over 5,000 people in California reported coming down with Valley Fever. That's up 63% from the same period last year. To help us learn more about this illness and why cases are going up, we're speaking with Dr. George Thompson. He's the co-director of the Center for Valley Fever at UC Davis Health. Dr. Thompson, good afternoon.
Thanks for having me with you.
Our listeners may have heard the term Valley Fever, but maybe don't know a whole lot about it. What is Valley Fever and why has it spiked this year?
Yeah, Valley Fever is caused by a fungus that lives in the soil called Coccidioides, and it really is very related to precipitation and drought patterns. So during years with a lot of drought, we have a lot more cases. Certainly anything that kind of stirs up the soil is going to bring those spores up into the air where they can be breathed in, and that's what causes infection is these airborne spores, and they most frequently present with a pneumonia or a respiratory type illness.
So does climate change play a role in Valley Fever?
That's a great question and something we've been working on for not just Valley Fever, but a lot of different fungal pathogens. And we do think they're highly related. So I mentioned really the association of Valley Fever with precipitation and drought. But really, fungi are all environmental pathogens. They would much prefer to live in the dirt or in a different animal that doesn't quite have the defenses that we do. But as the environment warms up, these fungi become more accustomed to warmer temperatures. That enables them, we think, to cause more infections in us and higher order mammals that have a higher body temperature. So our body temperature is one of the main ways that we prevent fungal infections. There's some really interesting data that's been published that also suggests human body temperature is decreasing over the last 100 years. So as the environment warms up and we get colder, that margin and that ability to fight off fungi based solely on body temperature is narrowing. So we do think we're going to see new fungal pathogens emerge and may be related to why we're seeing more cases of Valley Fever.
So is this like body temperature in the moment? Like, because there was this outbreak at an outdoor music festival, right? So why was that? And could people have like warded it off by dancing harder, you know, getting their body temperature up?
Yeah, that's a great question. The body temperature decrease seems to really be a first world problem that is probably a product of improved hygiene, less tuberculosis, less hepatitis, less ongoing inflammation all the time. And our body temperatures have begun to decline as a result of that. We've seen new fungal pathogens emerge over the last few years. We've seen other fungi adapt, and we're working on Coccidioides, Valley Fever, to see if that's going on. But transient increases in temperature probably are not going to protect you. Dancing harder, those kind of things are kind of fun to think about, but probably wouldn't play a big role.
So why the outbreak at the Lightning in a Bottle festival that was in Kern County?
Yeah, so Valley Fever is named after the Central Valley of California. It's really where the syndrome was first recognized. And we obviously can see cases in a majority of within California and also cases in Arizona. So anything that really disturbs the soil can potentially throw those spores up into the air. So dancing around, certainly just walking, being in the wrong place at the wrong time can expose people to those spores and cause the syndrome we know as Valley Fever.
So it's Valley Fever because it originated in the Central Valley and then now has it spread to other areas, or is this illness just in our California Central Valley?
It's primarily within the Central Valley. We do see some unique situations where it can blow the organism sort of outside the traditional region where we're used to seeing it. We occasionally will see it in even Northern California up by Redding. There's a few reports of that. About 10 years ago, we noticed Valley Fever cases actually in southeastern Washington State, which is far from where we had become accustomed to seeing that. That has spurned a lot of debate about, is this early evidence that climate change is shifting the geographic region of these different pathogens, or are we just newly recognizing that in those locations with population expansion, more construction, and certainly our hobbies are taking us to all parts of the world now. We think the fungus has probably been in Washington State for 1,000 years, so probably only newly discovered there. But that same phenomenon is occurring as the fungus moves eastward. There's been cases reported as far east as Nebraska and Missouri over the last few years. So we do think this is a fungus on the move.
So should folks be concerned in various areas around California and outside California? Is Valley fever, you know, could it be coming for them?
Yeah, I think we've coexisted with Valley fever for a long time. And about 97% of all patients who get Valley fever are not going to have long-term problems with it. You know, 60% of patients who breathe in the spores never even know they were exposed. Their immune system deals with it quickly, rapidly, and they never present for clinical evaluation. So, you know, I do think we're going to see more and more cases. The key really for us is to educate both patients and providers alike to make sure patients are tested for Valley fever. That's the main thing is patients with respiratory illnesses that really are lingering along for several weeks. If you're in the Central Valley, you should be tested for Valley fever.
So let's talk about the actual getting sick. Like what are the mild symptoms and what are the more serious symptoms?
Yeah, the mild symptoms, which are what the vast majority of people who do have any symptoms at all are going to exhibit, are things like fever, chills, night sweats, cough. They might have some pain in their chest with that cough. And then fatigue is really one of the most problematic. That seems to last for weeks to months for patients, even who ultimately do well. The bad part is about 3% of patients will develop some chronic form of the disease. So Valley fever can go on to cause a chronic pneumonia that's got to be treated with antifungals for months or even years. And then less than 1% of patients will develop a very morbid form of the disease. And that's when it leaves the lungs, our immune system fails to control the infection, and it can go to the bone, or it can go to the skin, or the most feared manifestation is meningitis, where it causes brain infection. So and those patients really require long-term therapy. Meningitis requires lifelong treatment.
So is Valley fever ever fatal? Do people die from this?
We unfortunately do see deaths every year from Valley fever. The majority of those have meningitis. They have infection that's just not responding to treatment. Or we see patients who had a really high level exposure. So like a construction worker, anthropologists, you know, that are digging in the dirt, those kind of things, motorcycle rallies with lots of dirt exposure. So with massive spore inhalation, we do see people with overwhelming pneumonia. But the vast majority of deaths are from patients with meningitis.
You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. If you're just joining us, we're talking with Dr. George Thompson from the Center for Valley Fever about this illness. Dr. Thompson, what populations are most at risk of contracting Valley fever?
We see Valley fever really in anybody with a lot of soil exposure. You know, again, construction workers, you know, motorcycle rallies are sort of one of the classic things we hear about. But you can get it just from being in the wrong place at the wrong time. We take care of truck drivers that have been down I-5 through the Central Valley and just inhaled a spore on a given day. But one of the sort of oddities of Valley fever is it has a predilection for males. So our male patients develop infection about 2-to-1 ratio more frequently than females. And we do think that's biologic rather than sociologic. And we've proven that in a number of different studies. And then those of either oceanic or African genomic ancestry tend to have worse disease. And they have a form of disease that leaves the lung more frequently compared to our Latino or Caucasian patients. And we've been working on the genetics of that for a long time with the goal really of trying to tell patients very early in the course of their infection if their genetics have put them at risk really of a bad complication or bad outcome.
So you're mentioning some like minority groups, right? Like African Americans, people from oceanic descent. I'm curious how much would genetics play as a risk versus social factors like where populations live and their access to healthcare?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, we think it's probably both, like most things in life. You know, those are groups that are more likely to be exposed to, you know, construction activities, those kind of things, either occupationally or by hobbies. But we do think that there is a big genetic component to this. You know, I mentioned we want to screen patients and use that prognostically. But if we can really identify the genetics causing a certain immune response that may not be able to clear the infection. We're hoping to be able to augment that with medications or other maneuvers really to help them clear it. Obviously, lifelong therapy is not what we want patients to have to take. So if we can find new methods to cure these patients, that's really the goal.
So whether someone lives in the Central Valley or is just maybe going down there to visit, how can people protect themselves?
Yeah, again, Valley fever for the most part is wrong place, wrong time, and your exposure is going to be dependent. Your infection risk is going to be dependent on the degree of exposure. We see patients with just a one-day exposure, but the majority of them live and work in the Central Valley, so they have sort of cumulative risk. We know from old studies, at least, that if you live in the Central Valley, you've got about an 8% per year rate of acquiring Valley fever. Again, the majority of those are never going to have symptoms and they're immune. They're not going to develop disease later. But for those who really around a lot of dirt exposure, like construction workers, you know, we do see this in our firefighters. We've had lots of wildfires in California. And then the solar field workers with, you know, digging trenches, those are pretty high risk occupations. And NIOSH does have very clear guidance on respirators, N95 masks, and then wetting the soil to try to prevent those spores or the top layer of dirt from being blown up into the air and breathed in.
So just in our last 30 seconds, is there a cure or a vaccine, or where's this going? What do we hope that we can achieve with Valley fever?
Yeah, Valley fever is a tough pathogen. You know, a lot of fungi we breathe in every day and never know it. Our immune system takes care of it pretty quickly. Valley fever is really large. Our immune system has a hard time fighting that off. Even antifungals are not always affected. So we would much prefer to figure out how to augment the immune system. And then our ultimate goal is a vaccine. And we were at the NIH just a few weeks ago talking about a number of different vaccines in development. And those are set to be started in clinical trials in humans. Hopefully within the next year, we'd have a Valley fever vaccine. That'd be the first fungal vaccine, but could ultimately prevent infection and the ensuing complications.
Dr. Thompson, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Dr. George Thompson is the co-director of the Center for Valley Fever at UC Davis Health. And just a note, UC Davis Health is a financial supporter of CAP Radio. Up next, a comedy about race that's not really a comedy at all. CAP Stage kicks off its 20th season with the Pulitzer Prize-winning production, Fairview. You're listening to Insight on CAP Radio, where facts matter and stories inspire. I'm Alan Young.